Welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials, where we help you accelerate your career and turn soft skills into hard money by mining gold from project failures, bringing insights from ecosystem experts, and inspiration from others on the trail. Now joining us with over 20 years in the ecosystem, please welcome our host, John Klein.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. I'm your host, Jackson Hull. And I'm really excited to have you guys here with me as we walk through another tale from the fails. I'm also excited to be hosting this solo as my maiden voyage that I will be able to captain you all as we traverse through these waters of untold failure. Now, obviously, I guess they are told failures since I will be reporting on them, but I'm excited to walk along this journey with you so that we can discover why the Birmingham City Council had to declare bankruptcy over an ERP implementation, some of the people first concerns that arose from this, and also what you can do to resist such project risk and learn from their failure and make it your success. There's a couple of things I want to highlight before we jump into Birmingham City Council, though. There's an article from Forbes that I find both saddening and interesting called Three Main Reasons Why Big Technology Projects Fail. And I want to highlight two key pieces of data. Right here, that 75% of ERP projects fail, and that CRM projects fail at nearly the same rate, and that 95% of product innovation projects fail. These are significant numbers, with a majority of projects failing. The goal here for Salesforce Trails and Trials is to take these numbers and dwindle them. We want to change the industry. We want people like you who are listening to learn from these failures and take the skills and the tools that we provide you so that we can decrease these failure rates. We also want to move you into the success rates, into the unfortunately only 5% or only 25% of projects that succeed. And so there's kind of a twofold goal here as we get the word out about these tools and tactics, about why these projects are failing. We want to reduce these numbers as well as enable you to be in the 5 or 25% that succeed. And so as we go throughout the tale from the fails today, the Birmingham City Council ERP failure, you'll notice a lot of the people first concerns that come out of this. And you'll also notice that all of the four key failures that I'll be talking about don't have to do with technical concerns. And this is to be expected because that's what the research shows. So if we jump over to this article here by Zipia, it's called 25 must-know project management statistics. It highlights here that when it comes to project failure, 50% of projects fail due to poor requirements definitions, 37% of projects fail due to a lack of clear goals, 55% of projects cite budget overruns as a reason for failure, and almost 40% of projects fail due to poor planning. So we just take these four reasons here, and this one here is a little bit of a different case, but these top three, the 50%, the 37%, and the 39% are all non-technical in nature. Each of these are intangible skills. They're things like requirements not being defined accurately, clear goals not being established, such as ownership and where the project is headed, and poor planning. Or planning not being implemented at all. And so these non-technical issues are what we're going to see. All three of these actually occurred in the Birmingham City Council ERP failure. So failure number one was inadequate planning and risk management. What happened here was that the bank reconciliation issues were noticed early on in the project. The project began in October of 2019, and late in 2019, issues arose with the bank reconciliation software, and it was not made known to stakeholders. The client, in this case, the government, was not made known of critical bank reconciliation failures. They were just ignored. So when the processes and the system launched, it couldn't handle the critical functions of bank reconciliation, like payment processing, cash flow, things like this. And so it led to chaos. This delayed and distributed incorrect payments, which forced costly manual workarounds, which is part of that $60 million that I mentioned before. And so these issues were ignored. They weren't surfaced early. And this led to chaos, which resulted in millions of additional fees for consultants to come in and fix these things, as well as enable employees to do manual workarounds. And this impacts some people first concerns as well, because employees were overburdened with manual workarounds. They were taken away from their actual duties to help the citizens of Birmingham by manually adjusting or ensuring that bank reconciliation processes occurred correctly. And small businesses had to rely on council payments, and they were left unpaid for months. So this impacted the livelihood of the shop owners, of the families that were included in those shops. And so there's always people first concerns, and that's what we're going to see here. And the more and more you think about a people first perspective, you'll see that there's always more than just financial impact. Another key failure was poor communication and stakeholder engagement, or no engagement or no communication at all. We kind of saw this in the last failure, that an issue was noticed by the consultants, but it wasn't brought up to leadership. Other things that happened were project managers provided misleading updates to senior leadership. And so the stakeholders and senior leadership, the people who were making decisions, were not only not informed, but they were misinformed. And so vital committees to the government, such as the audit committee, which handles the financial concerns of the citizens, was unaware of the system's critical risks and a lot of the issues that the financial and HR systems were having until it was too late, until go live. Remember, with the last project, these issues were known, go live occurred, and then they started fixing these issues. And so some of the cost impacts here were a lack of clear reporting, which delayed intervention. It did not enable the leadership team to open up funds or enable the consultants to go in and fix these issues. And so this was an additional millions of dollars in unavoidable emergency spending, because the system had already gone live and these things needed to be fixed. There was also inefficiencies in financial tracking. And so this led to errors in financial statements, and this added to the bankruptcy crisis, as well as the government being investigated. And obviously, these are financial concerns, and with them comes the stress of the committees and the leadership, and these failures falling on the shoulders of the people. And so some of the people first pains here were the staff and leadership being caught off guard when the system went live and failing, resulting in last minute scrambling and blame shifting, burnout. And a lot of this is something that we experience in projects as well. And I'll go over that more when we get to the lessons learned. But the people first pains here really are the blame shifting and the burnout, as well as the public services being halted or slowed or suffering due to the poor financial visibility and funds needing to be diverted into emergency services to emergency services for the consultant. And this affected infrastructure projects and social care funding and just funding all around for vital services that the city was providing. And so I want to highlight here two things or really one thing for both of these failures. So far, neither of these failures have proved to be technical in their nature. Now, certainly, there were issues in the technical side of things, and these were noticed, but the non-technical comes in, and the risks arise because of the intangible and the non-technical not surfacing or not bringing these things to leadership. And so far, both of these key failures have been non-technical in nature. They've been a failure to communicate the risks, which could have pro which did prevent proactive fixes, and also there was a failure in project planning and letting the stakeholders know of issues that were imminent in the project. Failure number three was an axiom that I learned in the People First Method, which is not letting demand justify complexity. And what this means is implementing custom solutions when the standard solution would do just fine. And what this looked like is instead of using Oracle's standard ERP features, BCC made unnecessary customizations, making the system harder to maintain and harder to troubleshoot. These excessive modifications led to integration failures and unexpected performance issues, making it so that the system was not working within itself because of a heavy reliance on customization. And this led to things like the original estimate doubling, going from 24 million to 48 million, as well as needing consultants to continuously work or be available on the project because of the reliance on custom processes. And so custom fixes had to be made for future upgrades, which obviously is more expensive, more time consuming, and balloons the budget as well as the timeline for this project. And we saw in the article that given the original go live date of December 2020 and the actual go live date of April of 2022, that relying on complex and custom solutions here added to that difficulty and added to the expanded timeline and cost. And some of the people first concerns here was user adoption, that users struggle to learn and to adapt to the new system because of how heavy customization was. It didn't meet standard Oracle training material. Just like Salesforce, many ERPs or other CRMs enable their customers and give them training materials like Trailhead or these Salesforce provided information or manuals or things that teach them about standard Salesforce behavior. And so the consultants here either had to develop custom training materials or just didn't develop any at all. And this led to a decreased user appreciation of the system, and users struggled to learn and to adapt and change to their environment that was newly given to them. And this also meant that IT staff faced higher maintenance burdens as well, because the consultants passed this project on to IT and admin of the client side. And so this meant that they had to deal with and learn a lot of these more difficult and complex processes. And so the non-standard configurations here put a higher burden on the staff. And this here is also not a technical failure. And so you might think that while they didn't rely on standard features and implemented custom features, there's really a deeper issue here. And the technology, when it did work, it ended up being successful 2 years later. But the BCC's decision to over customize here is really where the key failure is. Not that the technology itself was in the wrong. And so BCC's decision to over customize this system made it more prone to failure and more expensive to maintain. It made it harder for users to adopt. And so the axiom from People First Method that I try to put in practice when I'm on a CRM projects is not letting demand, or rather letting demand justify complexity, and not moving to the custom, not moving to the complex when the standard data model will enable a solution. The last key failure I want to highlight is the weak governance and leadership within the project. So what this looked like is a senior leaders not being fully informed or fully engaged in the project and being aware of project risks. This led to poor decision making, and also the project team prioritized meeting deadlines over fixing critical issues. And a lot of times you see this in projects where the client will require that budget is met and timeline is met, and that is prioritized over a working product or a product that benefits users and the people that it's going to interact with. And so, or rather, the people are going to interact with the system. And so that looks like the leadership of really both the consulting side as well as the client side not being aware of the correct path to take because their middle management was being either not telling them or updating them with the right information, or just not giving them information at all when it came to critical components of processes failing or of updates that needed to be given. And so weak governance here and weak leadership primarily occurred in the consulting team and the ERP team that was bringing the product. And that impacted the way the leadership of the client or the leadership of the government here viewed the ERP team. And so some of the costs that arose because of this was the rushing of the flawed go live system, which I've already highlighted in the last three failures. We see how much this rushed go live impacted their system, because it resulted in a system that required millions of dollars of immediate post launch fixes. And so it wasn't that these issues were discovered months, weeks, or years down the road. Rather, it was immediate that the launch, the go live occurs of this system, and millions of dollars need to be spent just to get it up and running, because the leadership of the ERP team wasn't willing or was operating on false information. Either way, their culture and values were misaligned, and they did not bring the correct information and prioritize budget and timeline over a working system with critical flaws. Some of the people first concerns here were the employees feeling frustrated and powerless because their bosses were forcing through this project, really, that the work that they were doing wasn't recognized, or they weren't enabled to provide a superior working product. But rather, the money, the budget, and the timeline were prioritized. And so the employees here were frustrated, and problems were mounting, and leadership was not taking action. And what this meant really is that the public lost faith in the government, and the public lost faith in the client. And a lot of times we think of project failure on our side. But project failure impacts the clients, obviously, but the clients' customers a lot of time as well. And that's what we see in this failure, that the public's perception of Birmingham, of the city council, was diminished because the project led to significant financial loss of taxpayer revenue or taxpayer money, as well as loss in public trust and financial processes not being transacted correctly. And so here, this is also not a technical issue, ultimately, or a technical failure at its root. This was an issue with leadership, with risk management and mitigation, and governance failure. And so ultimately, it wasn't a software problem, as the prioritization of budget and timeline over a working adoptable product was the reason why we see this critical failure here. Well, I've highlighted four core key failures. There likely are more problems in this project, but the pattern I think now is clear, that these four core failures illustrate the pattern that most technical projects fail due to non-technical reasons. The tech project here, the failure was not caused by bad software. Was not caused by an inability on the ERP implementation side. It wasn't an issue in the product itself or in the consultants, the admins, the developers that were giving this information, but rather it was caused by poor planning, governance, a lack of communication, and weak leadership. And this problem is not unique to BCC. Unfortunately, it happens in, as we saw with the research, 75% of ERP rollouts, as well as CRM implementations. This also is true of most industries that you can think of. The 95% of project innovation failure rate is not unique to ERPs in the UK. And so I want to walk through these key failures again and talk about some of the core vital learning that we can draw from them, because programs like People First Method really help us understand these non-technical aspects, and we utilize axioms to ingrain in our mind the response that we ought to have when these things occur. Because the four key failures here are fairly ubiquitous. They're in many of the projects that you as a consultant are going to interact with. And so when we see things like inadequate planning and risk management, things like poor communication, no or poor stakeholder engagement, not letting demand justify complexity, as well as weak governance and leadership. We want to be able to react well, and we want to be prepared for the meetings that we go into, and to be prepared to display artifacts and give the client what they need when we're in the thick of it, when the stress is bearing down upon us, and the leadership of our client is asking for an answer that we might not have, or that we aren't ready for. And so, part of this is I want to enable you with some axioms that will make you ready, or that you can mull over. And if you're interested in delving deeper, I think People First Method here was incredibly helpful for me to go through and put into process and change my mindset on a lot of these issues. So I think one solution here would be to rigorously plan and surface risks early on in the project. So conducting realistic scoping and risk assessments before implementation is vital. This means adopting phased rollout strategies is one way to minimize the risk here, because we aren't taking massive chunks of projects, and we aren't expanding the amount of people and the amount of configuration that we're bringing over all at once for a go live. And so planning here looks like bringing into the project artifacts that are already prepared. So artifact templates, knowing what artifacts you're going to bring into the project, and making the stakeholders aware, because the stakeholders are going to be interacting with these artifacts throughout the project, as well as after. The artifacts that you bring in should outlive you, and it should enable the admin team of the clients or the consultants in the future to know what happened in this project, and give the leadership what it needs to progress through the system and the product that you gave them. A second solution here is transparent communication and stakeholder oversight and engagement. I know this seems fairly obvious to be honest or to be transparent. And a lot of times that's said, it's prioritized in the pictures on the wall in the businesses, or maybe you have meetings, corporate engagements that say, be honest and tell the truth. But a lot of the times when it comes down to the wire, and when issues in the bank reconciliation system are known about, these issues are not surfaced because perceived conflict is at the root of that. That when I perceive an issue, or when I notice that this system isn't working, I'm going to have to tell someone, and that's going to bring up conflict, because the client wants it to work. They don't want to pay more, and they already have their budget, and they come up with all these reasons. At the core, the reason why issues aren't brought to the attention of clients a lot of times is because of conflict, because we get that the adrenaline and the fear that comes into us that prevents us from moving forward with conflict. And maybe we blame shift, which we saw occurred in this project, or we don't take responsibility. And so one solution here is transparent communication. That really means when you notice a risk, bring it up to your stakeholder. When you notice a risk, bring it up to leadership. You yourself aren't the one necessarily that has to go into the stakeholder meeting and tell them about the issue, but letting this risk be known and not sweeping it under the rug to be dealt with later is something vital that we need to enact, as well as providing clear and unfiltered progress reports as well. So stakeholders being engaged is something that's vital and can be done well through progress reports that are continuously sent out with brief snapshots of project health, and as well as budget and what's occurring, what's going to be done, and what was done in the last week. And so leadership here should be challenged to be optimistic, but to have a realistic view of project timelines. And sometimes this means recognizing the valley of despair, that all projects follow, for the most part, a cycle. And so I encourage you as you go through your projects here to learn from this failure that surfacing risk early might lead to conflict in the moment, but it causes projects to succeed because you are making sure that the project management is occurring and leading to project success. We look at, again, the 25 must-know project management statistics. The three reasons that I'm highlighting here are the poor requirements definition, the lack of clear goals, and poor planning. And a lot of this has to do with communication. You could, as well, the budget overruns being a reason for failure. Really, a lot of these are a lack of transparent communication. Because when we have clear goals, that means we communicated effectively with the stakeholder so that they might know who is doing what. And this means that the consultant, him or herself, knows what they're doing on their side, as well as what's been assigned to the client, because oftentimes the collaboration between both parties means communication needs to be clear. And we want to prevent a lot of the blank canvas thinking that we can put in front of the client, something that's a blank sheet or an Excel spreadsheet that's not filled out, and ask them for something. We want to move away from that and be clear in our communication. The third solution here is to minimize unnecessary customization and improve change management processes. We saw with the not letting demand justify complexity. A lot of times consultants will want to show and prove their worth, whether they think that it's intentional or not. When they develop these custom systems, there could be something underneath that that makes them want to keep their job. Maybe a more complex process requires that they be kept on the project, or relying on complex and different systems makes it so they're always brought back in, or they are always needed to be called into a project. But this always adds unnecessary burden on the leadership of the consulting team, the project managers, the users themselves. And a lot of times Salesforce as an account-centric CRM will give so much, so many business solutions are satisfied by Salesforce standard data model that we don't need to implement custom solutions. I've seen a lot of projects where custom sales models and custom quoting processes has been enabled when Salesforce opportunity products, quotes, and the quote process could have been used and saved the client lots of money, and that budget could have been moved elsewhere to improve the client's business. And so relying on custom processes really brings the project to a possible risk and possible failure, because we're relying and putting a lot of money in things that Salesforce already provides for us by standard. The training materials as well that need to be produced for custom solutions add budget and add a timeline and make the project less helpful, because Salesforce produces so much training material that we can just send links to the client if we're utilizing the standard data model that Salesforce provides. Another solution within this I mentioned was improving change management. And so this looks like adopting a strict, or at least a baseline, change management strategy that helps consultants move from staging to testing to production, because we want these transitions to be smooth and we don't want users to be noticing issues the day of go live when these issues were noticed back in 2019 and we're in 2022 with the project already live. And so when issues are stalled, early testing needs to be done. Another key failure of this that I didn't want to go into due to time was a lack of early testing. And this really highlights the vitality of testing and test plans, that doing early testing with use cases gets the product in front of the client and enables them to respond positively or negatively and gets their sign off if it is in the affirmative, if it is something that they're actually going to use and what they ask for. And this also helps with our solution concerning transparent communication, because we've told the client this is what we've done. We've told the client this is what we need you to do. And once there's alignment there, we can get sign off and move forward with deployment. And so this also with early testing and ensuring that we have a change management process It enables us to reduce the risk by clearly communicating what is going to be done, as well as having a process for moving from the build in Sandbox to the testing in Sandbox to the deployment and to the go live. And so this helps users transition smoothly as well, because everyone is already on board and moving forward with what the client signed off on. While we mentioned all of the people-first concerns for the failures and how it negatively impacted people, I want to end on a positive note, and I want to end on how these three solutions could impact the people that are interacting with these projects. So the three solutions of rigorous planning and risk management, transparent communication and stakeholder interaction, and minimizing unnecessary customization and improving change management. I want to briefly mention these four positive impacts that will impact the people interacting and on these projects. We have less burnout and stress for employees. We saw with the BCC ERP failure that the employees of the client were stressed out for having to do the manual workarounds and for having to do things that they weren't hired to do. And one of the axioms I was taught at People First Method was turning chaos into compliments. And during the discovery process, a lot of times we'll unearth the crazy things and the chaotic things that employees have to do to get the product to their customer. And we want to turn those into compliments. And so less burnout and stress for employees here can look like you and one non-technical tactic you can take away from this. You can say things like, "I really appreciate and I want to highlight that you are doing a lot to get the product to your customer or get the end goal out so that your customers are able to interact with you. And so I really appreciate slogging through the chaos that we've noticed here in the legacy system." And so reducing burnout and stress is one vital aspect here. Another is gaining the trust of your stakeholder as well as the stakeholder's customer. And so the citizens in this case needed to trust their government, and the businesses relying on the government services were impacted by the financial chaos. And so the inverse of that is increased trust of not only the client, but of your team as well, because you are bringing them along and enabling them to be leaders in the project as well. And so greater trust is a solution, as well as faster recovery from these issues. So some of the people first concerns as well are we are enabling with some of the processes we're putting down, like having early testing and ensuring that we have change management processes, is that we can create phased approaches that allows for detecting problems early and actually solving them and moving forward with deployment of a product that is actually adoptable. And then that's the last people first concern, is that we are giving the people that are using the system an adoptable and user-friendly system, rather than being so focused on budget and timeline that we are to the degradation of the product just moving forward. With these solutions, we're actually able to give products to the end users where they are enabled to interact with their customers safely and interact with their customers in a better way, where they are doing what they were hired to do. Well, as we land the plane, I wanted to thank you for listening through this podcast, and I hope you learned something from this tale from the fails. Be sure to like and subscribe if this impacted you, if you learned anything. Share this with someone who might be going through this in a project that they're currently engaged in. And if you do need additional help, and if you are looking for greater expertise in the intangible and the non-technical elements of projects, DevPod for Salesforce Partners would be a great fit. I've been with DevPod for about 4.5 years now, and we specialize in bringing red accounts into green accounts and reducing project churn. We specifically look to partner with Salesforce implementation partners, or SIs, in bringing projects to completion. And so if that's something that interests you, or if that's something that you're currently in the midst of and need help, please reach out to us. We'd love to help you. And that's what we're in the business in. We're in the business of helping people, and the software is just the tool to get there. So appreciate you listening to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. If you found this episode valuable, we would love your help reaching others. Please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this with another who would benefit.